And now, it's time for the Dad Bod Rap Pod with your hosts, Damone Carter, David Ma, and Nate LeBlanc.
Dad Bod Rap Pod, episode 168. I am your host, Damone Carter, aka Dim One. I am joined in Zoom, as I always am, by my brethren, Nate LeBlanc. What's happening?
Everything's good. It's a nice spring day. We're here talking. We have like all these great interviews and people we're interacting with. So I'm feeling good. I'd tell you if I wasn't.
Yeah. You definitely wear your discontent on your sleeve. Always a nice t-shirt though that you wear the discontent on. Speaking of nice t-shirts, my guy, Dave, do you have on a sweater today? This is Dave Mott, ladies and gentlemen, who wears a t-shirt in the dead of winter. It's 85 degrees today. He's got on a sweater. Dave, explain to the people you're thinking.
I just like to be an open contrarian.
Talking about such basic thing as the day's temp.
Yo guys, it's really good to be here, sort of harping on what Nate said. Beautiful day, and you know that's always a good feeling. But you know what makes things a little bit more sunnier is your tweet, Damone, about, you know, just how we've had our best month ever. So I just want to shout out, man, the engaged listenership, and I want to shout out Open Mic Eagle and the Sony Islands pod family for steering this mothership, and we're gonna keep going. We got a lot of cool things in the chamber, and you know, we're all in good moods today, so you know, cheers to that.
Yeah, man, it's been great to kind of see the impact of what we've been doing and to see people really vibing and connecting with it, and being able to, you know, get some of the folks who are fans of Open Mic Eagle to kind of turn the direction towards the show has been great. Nate, we cracked top 100 Apple Music podcasts in the United States and the UK. No,
it's true. If these charts for the service we don't subscribe to are to be believed, it's our first time crossing that threshold, and that's a competitive category. It's a lot of really good shows in that category, so it you know, that's great. And I think what we're doing is like exploring hip hop in a different way than has been before. This is something I've been thinking about, talking about. It's all about like connecting. It's like a big recommended, if you like. It's like a big recommendation engine. Like we're like, this is what we think you should pay attention to if you like the music we do. And I think that's coming into a bit clearer focus lately. And it's all about like which pieces of the eras and how they fit together. And anyway, we just had a big conversation about that you guys will hear more about later. But obviously my head is kind of swimming with this kind of connective fabric idea. And I feel very privileged to be people's guide through that if they want to listen to what we have to say. Like, I think this is something we think a lot about and we've thought a lot about, and that especially with the amount of new music that we encounter on the reg, it's kind of hard to decide what to focus on. And we have an interview with an artist this week who we've been kind of tracking their progress and development for a while. And to get to talk to this person, I think, Damone, you said this off mic, like we understand their music so much better now.
It's better. Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's cool to be like the three-man algorithm.
Was just you know say that.
Yeah,
that I call the name Al. You guys either have to be Go or Rhythm.
Or Rhythm. Dude, why, you know what I can't get out of my head is God, the song title is gonna escape me right now. But Billy Woods says algorithms in a way on this new on the new Arm & Hammer Haram record. His pronunciation of it is just so excellent and so weird. Shout out to Woods. You know how those lines just get stuck in your head?
Yes. Well, with him, he's the master of enunciation and like so much finality. It's like a gavel every time, like boom.
I'm like, I'm sure you mispronounced that, but it was so hard. Oh, yeah. So dope. We're happy to, you know, be here with you, to be chopping it up, to be engaging with the new interesting rap music that's coming out and being your Sherpa, as it were, to what you need to be listening to. But we're also a podcast that looks back and reflects on what is considered the canon of rap music, and bringing, you know, decades upon decades of listener experience to that. So from that perspective, and also from the perspective of just three guys who grew up in the Bay Area, we are still kind of reeling from the loss of Shock G from Digital Underground, who passed. By the time you hear this, it'll have been a couple weeks. But we definitely wanted to just dedicate some time to talk about his life and work and its impact on us. And also, you know, this kind of disturbing sort of trend that's emerging around rappers of a certain age and these kind of untimely deaths. But I wanted to begin just by talking about Shock G and his work. And Nate, can you, for folks who probably might only know Shock from the Humpty Dance, I saw somewhere, and it just drove me crazy, he was just, it was like kind of an obit type of tweet that was like, this is the biggest thing he ever did, and like, he's important because of the Humpty Dance, and which is an amazing song. I actually know it word for word. But Nate, can you contextualize for folks who Shock G was and kind of the group Digital Underground for folks?
I'll give it my best shot. Certainly, he leaves a towering legacy. So Shock G's name was Greg Jacobs, and he was a musician, especially a like brilliant self-taught keys player. He was one of the primary drivers of introducing the reference points of Parliament Funkadelic into rap music, and did that brilliantly throughout his career. He was a rapper. He was a band leader. He was an illustrator under the name Rackadelic. He hand drew in a very distinctive and very dope kind of comic booky, but not like Marvel comics, like kind of like Archie comics-y, really colorful style, Digital Underground's early 12 inches. He was a showman. He was like kind of a late in life, like a reclusive figure, someone people like couldn't quite get a bead on. So he lived a lot in his short life, and he made some incredible music. Digital Underground is a great band. And I think they are often thought of as the launching point for Tupac's incredible career. And indeed, I would say, I wouldn't put the Humpty Dance as Shock's finest musical achievement. I would probably put I Get Around, the only fun Tupac hit. maybe California Love. I'm getting off on a tangent. Anyway, I love that song. I've always loved that song. And he's just a really, really important musician who happens to have made his career in our part of the world. And he's really going to be missed by the hip hop community and the music community at large.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dave, can you kind of speak to the kind of impact Nate touched on? You know, he's definitely given credit for spawning the career of Tupac. And I know you were circling in on an interview with his guy Money B, the impact of Shock G in hip hop.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Nate covered a lot of the factual, instances about his career. But, you know, I was trying to get Money B on the show a few weeks before everything went down, and he was very responsive. And I think, fingers crossed, that might happen as well. But look, I mean, he obviously is having a moment and taking a moment, and we respect that because, you know, Shock G is going to leave a huge vat of emptiness. I think he's one of those guys that, like, when he walks into a room, other artists recognize real, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. So other artists like feel his sense of gravity. And like with all the film clips and all the audio clips recently due to his death, I love all the clips of him talking about other art. And you can tell that like he gets it, you know what I mean? And you know, like, how can you not love one of the best characters of all time, Humpty, which is based on Slick Rick and Groucho Marx. I mean, that's just the most brilliant combination for any character ever. And to top it off, it's like you get older and you learn that Shock played the keys on this and he produced that and he did the artwork for this. I mean, he was just like a fireball of a creative. And yeah, man, what else can you say? I mean, Humpty is one of the best. Shock is the best. Rest in peace and condolences to his family. I think hopefully this will only like grow his legend more. Cause I, you know, he's one of those people, and this is so cliche to say, but people weren't giving Shock his flowers, nope, right? Until nope. he passed. And then it was nope. like, is this for Which real? Am I misreading yeah. this tweet? And so, yeah. you know, that's sort of what I'm left with. This sense yeah. of emptiness, huge fan, cannot be overstated what he did for the Bay Area as well.
Yeah, it's a huge loss. I know for me in particular, Sex Packets, Digital right. Underground's debut album in 1989, for me was like, that was my first sexual education class. it's a really high concept album mm-hmm. that, you know, you should go check out. And it's the first, to Nate's point, Digital Underground through Shock's vision was the first group to really pick up on the whole vibe of Parliament Funkadelic. People mm-hmm. had sampled it, people had kind of cannibalized it, but in terms of this like massive group that had dancers and had mm-hmm. musicians and had its own artwork aesthetic, he brought that into hip hop, like better than anyone had ever done. And then this kind of party fun angle to the music, if you listen to Sex Packets, to me, Do What You Like is just such a monumental song. Freaks of the Industry, such a monumental song for its kind of like, you know, frat boy kind of, I think of it like the movie Porky's, like this really kind of playful sexual energy, mischief type of vibes that they brought to hip hop. And it was a lot of Shock G's vision. And in terms of Money B, who for a time was the ultimate feature verse master, and for Tupac, you know, he not only created his own career, but he created a lane for others, and he did not get his proper due in his lifetime, which is a problem. Like in hip hop, this is like a real, real problem, because I feel like we're a little too quick to discard people once they're too far removed from their last hit, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a huge loss, but it also speaks to this kind of string of losses of rappers of a certain age, which is really concerning. I know there's I think it's a New Yorker article that touches on it, which I haven't read yet, but it really kind of just deepens the sadness when you think about Shock, Black Rob, and DMX all died of health issues that, you know, I think for people of another income strata, probably preventable. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's this really sad tale of how people come through the music industry, make a lot of money for other people, and then kind of die sick and penniless. Like mm-hmm. It makes zero sense, and I'm not sure exactly how we are the fans are supposed to change that, but something has to change. I feel like if Keith Richards gets a fucking sniffle, totally. Like he's got the resources. He's also from Britain, so he has universal healthcare. but I feel like that for a class of Black artists, for rappers, the lack of any kind of safety net or even just baseline recognition is really sad until you die. Right. I almost would have felt better if people would have just continued to ignore him. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'm just kind of like, well, this is all great and fine, but it's part of our necrophilic fascination with rappers after they die, which I don't know. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way, as you can see, but huge loss, and I would encourage folks to go check out Digital Underground's work. I heard a great story during this kind of whole Shock reverence about how Tupac had threatened or was screaming at him for not giving him a beat like Kiss You Back. Mm. That it was such a hard beat, and Tupac was so mad about not being the beneficiary of it. And that's just great. Imagine being that type of artist. You have given right. Tupac, I Get Around Already. And he's furious with you for not giving you some more heat. So definitely a huge loss in the hip hop community. Well, with that, we keep pushing on with the program. So we have one foot in the past and kind of one foot in the future. And this week's program is a great example of that. We have an interview lined up with Pink Sifu. He's just a really, really interesting dude. Kind of a little bit of era mystery, mm-hmm. Nate, would you say? Coming into the interview, you were kind of like, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah, definitely. Working in a lot of different pockets, couple different aliases, couple of different groups. Before we talked to him, we weren't quite sure where he was from. We've talked about this quite a bit on the show. The last great currency in the social media age is mystique. Mm-hmm. And this artist has done a great job of crafting mystique. And he dropped a record last year. Damone, I'm going to ask you to say the title of it.
It is called Negro.
And it is a face ripping punk record with a heavy free jazz Sun Ra influence that you're about to hear about. And then some kind of art rappy statements. And who's doing that?
Right.
Like, where did this come from? Who is this guy? We had to know. So, you know, Dave, you were able to connect us with Pink Sifu. Do you remember when you first heard about his work, or was the first thing that kind of caught your ear?
It was one of his early Bandcamp drops. But you know what I really liked was his project with Fly Anakin, which made some noise last year. And I know that's sort of a more current project. But you know, it sort of speaks to his mystique that you're talking about. I mean, just his name alone, Pink Sifu.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you expect from an artist name that? You know what I mean? I loved the fact that we were unsure. You know, we weren't sure if he's going to be this volatile artist, you know, like how he projects sometimes. We were unsure of exactly where he was from. We were unsure of which project that we could talk about. And it was cool that once we finally did, everything was on the table, which again, is kind of like how his music is, right? He puts it all out there. So we really got what we weren't sure what we were getting, but we got it.
Yeah, and it was great to kind of hear about his grander vision for himself as an artist and his influences, which he'll talk about in the interview. And it's just really interesting because his record, Negro, which came out last year, and he's just released a Negro Deluxe kind of expanded version of the record. I'll let him describe to you, you know, what that's about. But I don't think we've ever had an artist that does something that's like in the vein of Mad Villain and then turns around and does something in the vein of Bad Brains, like, and then does something that's in the vein of Sun Ra. But and all the whole time, now that I heard that we did the interview and I kind of went back to some of his stuff, including his new verse on the Alchemist record, he's himself. Right. The whole time. Right. It's this very interesting, like, he doesn't like do a different voice. He doesn't like put a filter on, like in all of these different records. I mean, on Negro, he is screaming at you in a punk rock fashion. But on most of the other stuff, he's himself. And he manages to fit in these different pockets. And what I love is that he understands that you can't get with all of his stuff at one time. I thought that was I was kind of pressing him on that a little bit, and that was great to hear that he kind of understands who he is as an artist. And to me, I don't know if you guys would agree with this. He really gives me, the first time I heard him and going back to it now, he really gives me young Kendrick Lamar vibes. Like, I know Kendrick didn't do all of that different type of stuff, but he has an energy and a presence on a track that you go, oh, this is a new voice. It's like when I first heard Kendrick, I was like, huh, that is a new voice. That is a new approach built on other approaches. So super cool cat. He's from everywhere. He's going everywhere. He's doing everything. Was super gracious and chill on the program. And we were grateful to hear some of his some of his stories. And so here it is, our interview with Pink Sifu, Dead Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, we are back with another interview. Every week we talk to the artists that are moving and shaping the culture. Today is definitely one of those days. Joining us in Zoom, we have Pink Sifu. What's good, man?
What's goody? What's goody? That was an amazing introduction.
Right on, man.
My God, Grogu. Oh, nice.
That's what's up, man. Where are you joining us from right now? Are you in L.A.?
I'm in Baltimore.
Okay, I
moved out of LA for the rest of my life, but definitely the time being. Bro, me and my shawty moved to Baltimore. We are here for a little minute, then we're gonna relocate down south, probably Atlanta.
Okay. And that's a good lead into my question. I, upon first hearing you, was like, where is dude from? You have a southern thing. You kind of sound like you're from LA, maybe Midwest. Can you talk a little bit about your musical influences? And I know you moved around a lot too, but what are some of your musical influences that kind of help shape you as an artist?
I definitely give it up to Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where I was raised. I was born in Birmingham. I think my pops and my mom, helped me a lot with my music shit. My pops would play. My pops like a jazz head that like loved his trap shit, surprisingly. So he loves Charlie Parker. He loves like old jazz. Charlie Parker. He loves Miles Davis. And but he also loves Scarface and DMX. Like, so I got put on to a lot of Scarface and DMX as a kid. And then he loves Juvenile too. And then my older brother, who from Florida, he loved all the Hot Boys. So that's where I found my appreciation and love for Lil Wayne, through my older brother. And my pops listened to Juvenile. So it was like, Then my mama, she's like the Prince, Earth, Wind & Fire, Neo Soul type. She loved Jill Scott and Mary J. Blige. But then my auntie Danny, which is my brother's sister, bless her soul, she loved Erykah Badu and Funkadelic. Oh. So I would hear a little bit of that. I didn't know I was hearing Funkadelic. I told my cousin, her daughter, that. She was like, yo, I will always play Funkadelic. But I only really remember hearing Erykah Badu. And then, so yeah, I loved that. And then I listened to everything that was happening. See, I love T-Pain. Like, as a kid, I was listening to a lot of T-Pain and Lil Wayne. And then, but yeah, I always loved Badu, Three Stacks, Outkast, Dungeon Family. That's like, all my family members love that, because that's just like, that's down south Wu-Tang to us. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all of my family members love that shit. So I got put on the Goody Mob and Outkast as a kid too. So I feel like all of that is a lot of, because all of them niggas inspired by James Brown, Funkadelic, and Prince. Like, everybody I low-key mentioned, except for, like, Scarface and, like, Juvenile. But most of them niggas is all inspired by the same shit. So I feel like I got a good chunk of, like, shit to be inspired by. And, like, everything that was coming out as a kid, all the lean with it, rock with it, all the ignorant shit, that was my shit. So I love Soulja Boy. Mm. I love, like, all that shit, like, for real. And then movies helped a lot too. I used to, because I didn't really want to make music as a kid. I wanted to like act and be in the movies and help movies. And I found a lot of like, first time I heard a punk song, I think was Fight Club. No, the first time I remember hearing the Pixies was Fight Club. And I was like, damn, what is that? And I was, Where's My Mind? Mm-hmm. And like, Observing Report with Seth Rogen. He got the Pixies in there too. And I was all like, just old like rock shit, I'm like, damn, what fuck is that? So I definitely say movies helped a lot with like just hearing that other shit that I wasn't hearing on the radio, all the rock shit.
Okay, dope, man. Thank you. Well, you know, we're fans of your work, and I kind of want to start at the beginning and sort of and go backwards, or start at the most present and go backwards, actually. So with Negro Deluxe, I mean, it is certainly intense. You know, it's punk, it's noise, it's a lot of energy. But can you talk a little bit about the beginning, the intro, the Ross G sort of history? Can you just, you know, let the folks know a little bit about your history with him, why there was a dedication, and, you know, what his legacy means to you?
Man, Ross G is so important. I feel like with G, bro, it's kind of hard to like put in words, because you kind of, and I hate to sound like that because he just passed maybe a couple years ago, but you really had to be there to like really to get how powerful this nigga was. I mean, you can see it on Boiler Room, you can see it on like all any clips of Ross G performing. But like when I first moved to LA, me and my girl at the time, I was just blown away by what LA was doing and just all the LA, like the Odd Future shit, Top Dog shit, even this is New York, but even the Pro Era, everything, all the groups that was happening, but the LA production was like my main shit. So when I went there, I was like in search of that type of production. And then when I went there the first time, I got put on to like all of the Brain Feeder shit, Ganja Sufi, all of that shit. And that shit blew my head open. I love Ganja Sufi to this day. Ganja Sufi is the man. But through Ganja Sufi, I found out about Ross G. And Ross G had these mixes. He had a couple mixes. His mixes are just as far as his albums. And like, he had a mix called Happy Arrival Day, Sunrise, or Happy Ride Day. So I think it's still on his SoundCloud. But he had that mix, and that was my first time hearing Sun Ra. And I was like, oh shit, what the fuck is this? And so through Ross G, I learned about Sun Ra. And wow. Then when I went back to LA, we would see Ross G like on a train, going to Pooh Bah. I would see him at Union Station, or I'd be in like near Le Mert or whatever and see him on the train. I always catch Ross G on a train. And from that, I was like, I was like, yo, thank you. Like, thank you for me on the Sun Ra, blah, blah. And he's a cool nigga, like, word, word. And then I started seeing that nigga play at Lowen. And what him and the African Space Program used to do at that shit, like, this is too, also, the LA beat scene is hella diverse. But when I first went out there, it wasn't that many heads that's Black, that's also like repping that, like the Egyptian pyramid hieroglyphics, like Pan-Africanism. Like Ross G was doing all of that in the beat scene. One like no one else doing that, like in LA or low end beat scene. So he was doing that. And the African Space Program was that double. Cause like it had Eagle Nebula, had Kael Sadiq. And then I knew about his work with Zero too. And his shit was just so spiritual, bro. You could just hear it. Like everything. He was the first nigga him, Obliv, and DiBiase, but him for real was like the first nigga I saw use the SP like an instrument. Like it's like just all that shit. It just has sounds on it. And like he literally to me is like the hip hop Sun Ra. Like he was really like the hip hop, like beat scene Sun Ra. And he just opened my head to a lot. I got blessed to go over to the space maybe twice while he was alive. I recorded there once. He didn't like what we recorded. He said I was doing too much freaky shit. fast fact. But like I was so just geeked to be over there. He would always have some weird shit on his video, like some movies. And I just loved his whole vibe, bro. Like he really took me down that like free jazz, abstract jazz, like chaotic jazz, like journey. Like, anytime I listen to a new Sun Ra, I'm like, damn. Like, because that was G's thing, too. G would hunt for Sun Ra records overseas. So it's like, every time I just come across some new Sun Ra, some old wild jazz, I low-key be thinking of G. I'd be like, damn, G probably knew about this, or G probably would like this shit. Or even when I'm thinking, like, damn, but because I used to tell Nick, I still tell homies, but I remember Nick Hakeem, he was working on his last album, and he was like, man, I'm just in a writing funk, and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, nigga, scream. Like, do something, just scream. Like, that shit can inspire you to do it. And I feel like I learned that from G, because G has so many different soundscapes in his albums. I'm pretty sure one of them albums was made off of no inspiration, and he just was doing weird shit. And that turned into a whole album, him doing weird shit. I feel like G got, and he will always say, like, stay 5 albums ahead, or just stay albums ahead. That's why he had so much work, because he would just shop at the different record labels. He was trying to get his ghetto sci-fi shit up off the ground. So G just a full inspiration, bro. Like, all he just really reminds me of Sun Ra's work ethic, and just, yeah, like, no limits. And so when I did that preview, he has a jazz, not jazz, I won't say jazz, but it's kind of free jazz. He has a very, like, free jazz abstract song, I think, on the intro of Back on the Planet. And when he died, the next show I did, I played that before my set. It was with Ringo. I opened up for Ringo at Elsewhere, and I hadn't played a show since G died, and I played that first. And then after playing that, it was like, the song kind of long too, it was like 4 or 5 minutes. And like, I don't think niggas at the show kind of knew he died or knew of G. So some niggas were looking at me like, is he going to play? But to me, I almost cried when that shit happened. And then I did my song. I kind of fucked up the first lyric, because I was still like a little like, you know, taking back. And then when I played that shit, I was like, yo, I need to dedicate something to G. G loved jazz. We both shared that free jazz love. So I was just like, I need to make something for G that's on this time. And when I first made that with Negro, I was like, I'm mad. This for G. I feel like G would have loved this shit. Like, so I just dedicated that to him. And everybody who even his old girlfriend, his lover who was with him to the day he died, she even heard that, and she was like, man, G would have liked that shit. Like, so it was, I think I did my thing. And me and G didn't get to do a song while he was alive that he was proud of. Mm-hmm. So, like, I still to this day feel like I was trying to impress G. Like, me and my nigga Logi, we wanted just to impress G. We wanted G to fuck with us for real. Like, so G was like my big bro, big dog that I wanted to impress in LA. Like, cause he was on that Pan-African wave and just straight repping, proud to be black the whole way through. And it was him and Ganja Sufi and Zero that I wanted to impress. Nice. And so, yeah, bro. Yeah.
I'd like to take it back to something you said in the middle of that. And I really appreciate you sharing that. The if you can't rap, just scream. I feel like that ties in neatly to kind of the overall art project of Negro and the new Negro Deluxe. There's a lot of energy, there's a lot of catharsis at work here, but it's also the website, the writing, the art, the videos. Can you talk about the overall project of what you've been like accomplishing with these couple of records?
Word. Man, I feel like you never really know until it's done. Or you look up and people tell you, like, yo. But I just wanted to, COVID really fucked shit up. Because I remember during Ensley time, me and Mike had an idea to, like, we was trying to, like, just do this Black Panther shit, like, a little bit over. Or just what they did, like, we was trying to do free breakfast spots. Maybe do like a magazine that we pass out to people in the community, all that shit. We just having all those talks. And I think from that, with not doing the COVID, not doing, being able to do shit with the COVID shit, I was like, damn, how could I do all of that in a place? Like, cause to me, the website kind of feel like like what you would learn at maybe a revolutionary activist or like a Black Panther, like educational thing. That website mad educational. Even though it's poetic too, it's like you hit them links or whatever and you get like a, oh shit, like a little 5 minute, 10 minute like history lesson or whatever. So I wanted to like add context to everything I was talking about in the album. And it was shit in the album that I didn't know of until I looked it up. It was just like shit I spoke on, shit I seen in movies, shit I seen in a couple books, shit the homies have talked to me. We talked to. So it was like even this album was a learning experience for me. And I'm like just now, not just now, but I'm like getting more into the information, all the ideologies of being a Muslim. And that was starting from that. You feel me? So that started with Negro, and then I jumped into the some knowledge on the 5%er, the 5% Nation, and me and Ali actually, and that was in that too, like me learning that. So like that's why all the tracks, I'm basically repping the Supreme Mathematics and like all the tracks. That's why 20. On the first one is Wisdom Cipher, because that added up, and so all of that. So I'm just like learning a lot just about shit that I've been attracted to my whole life. And I feel like that website, the album, even the videos is me dialing more in to that. And it's an ongoing process. Like even this album, the album's old and it's out. Like COVID, you still haven't been able to experience this live. And so now me and the band is getting that tighter right now. And both albums are released. We still ain't done that yet. So I feel like this is gonna be like kind of a ongoing thing in my career. I will want to do, like, I don't wanna do the Negro set every show, but I won't. Like, I would love to see, like, Kanye do 808s every, like, 5 years. Right. Or if Three Stacks did Love Below, I would love to see that every 10 years or something. So I feel like this is mine that I'm going to bring back, like, every once in a while. You feel me? Like, because it's important as shit. And I went so deep into it, and I was sober the first album, most of the first album, because I wanted to go into it on some Sunrise shit. I did it, like, middle of Ramadan, I was sober, one having sex with my girl. She was looking at me like crazy. And I was just trying to like really go into this album on some like, nah, this is a spiritual work. So the first album is really, I would say, is very spiritual work. And then this next one, the deluxe, is the shit I couldn't do with the first, shit I didn't have all the way completed. And it's just all of that, but it's still from that too. So it's like, yeah, I think I answered the question.
We appreciate you going deep with us on that question. I kind of want to follow up with that and ask, you know, you have this very diverse career. You kind of dabble with a lot of different types of sounds. You went deep into the Black Power knowledge bag, but it's presented in this format that's like free jazz meets punk rock. Did you ever get concerned about the messages that you're putting through to the music not getting through because you're not giving people the, you know, what they would have got on Ainsley or some of your other stuff? Did that cross your mind at all?
I mean, maybe, but that's why I like punk music, because that shit direct. Like, it's very direct. Like, white people trying to take my shit. Like, you could take that and be like, oh, this man hates white people. But, like, it's just that real expression. I mean, yeah, it definitely could get lost in the sauce for sure. But I feel like it's kind of this album like this is kind of more for like 10 years down the line. Like for real, for real. Like I even finding out about groups like Def, the first black punk band, like how did I find about Bad Brains before I found out about Def? So it's like, it's just like, I feel like this definitely for folks that's like, oh nah. Cause even my fans, I seen some fans on Twitter like, be like, this is the worst music I've ever heard. And they loved Instant. And I'm just like, how can you, it's really just cause of them punk, free jazz, lo-fi, like noisy aesthetic that they can't even just hear that one thing. So I don't know. I mean, I can't really speak for them. I feel like they're gonna catch on, cause like that's the thing too. I'm definitely in phases, but if you ask anybody that know me when I was a kid or whatever, I'm still the same nigga. So even though I'm in different phases, I'm grown. I still got like the same like moral, like compass and like conscious like decisions. So I feel like if you don't hear it now, you gonna hear it at some point, you feel me? It ain't gonna get like confused with the times type shit.
Okay. So what do you feel like because of COVID and you mentioned not having all the pieces that you wanted to, can you kind of just take us into why do a deluxe? Like the first record drop and why did you decide to kind of expand on that?
I definitely feel like because of COVID, yeah. And I also, to answer your old question too, I feel like you gonna get that shit when you see it live. It's gonna be no way to question it when you see it live. You're gonna be like, oh, word, I get what I missed. But I feel like the deluxe is definitely like, man, shit, I feel like everybody dropped the deluxe in COVID. And I got hella inspired by that. I was like, yo, this is smart as shit. This is a smart way to just keep the album ongoing. If it's good. If it's a good album and you feel like you got something to add on to it. But with the deluxe, I was like, I could do that. But I could also put the rap tracks that I didn't want to put on there. Because like it was a couple rap tracks that I wanted to put on there. But I was like, nah, I don't want this to be different. Like completely different. But with the deluxe, now I could talk about the shit I talked about in the punk shit, but also, I don't know, it's like two versions that mean the same thing. And I always wanted to do that shit, like double albums. I'm gonna do that soon for the next, but I love double albums and shit that means, all right, this is the hot side and this is the cold side. Like when me and Zero finished that shit, Zero was like, Negro Deluxe is like the smoke and Negro is the fire. And I was like, yeah, that makes hella sense. Like Negro Deluxe finishes the set list. It finishes even like rehearsing that shit with the band, the Negro Deluxe shit, I'm like, oh nah, this is a whole set now. This is a whole set. Like, it just completes it. And not saying Negro wasn't completed, but I had shit that I didn't put on there. I had other jazz joints. I had some psychedelic joints that I put on Negro Deluxe that also furthers, like, I don't want to get boxed in at all. And like, I feel like this deluxe kind of furthers that, like with some elements, with the psychedelic element, there's elements that I'm gonna put later in different albums. It like, it shows you glimpses of that. So I just wanted to do that too in a way that like keeps on with the journey. And I feel like Negro Deluxe definitely keeps on with the journey. Like, cause some niggas are hearing it like, why'd he do that? But that first jazz track, that's some of my best music, period. Like that first jazz track in the Negro Deluxe is crazy, the direction. And that's like kind of my direction and kind of just the musicians I picked, how we arranged it and how I mixed it. It's, and then the psychedelic shit that I like did with the band, like most of the Negro Deluxe shit ain't samples. It's like so I'm like, you gotta think, listen to it like that. I'm like, oh, like it's a different bag. And in the next Be Kool Aid album, we don't have that many samples. We're working with like Ali, is working with musicians and all that. So we kind of like trying to not leave samples behind, but just raise the bar and like actually like do what's in our head, like record what's in our head, make what's in our head without no middleman, without no sampling, without none of that. So I feel like if you listen to it like that, you see the growth. Like, dope. For real. But yeah.
Dope. Thank you, man. Yeah, tell the folks a little bit about the Ainsley Project, especially with, you know, you have so many different sounds, you work through different phases, and, you know, you have dozens of projects on your Bandcamp. Can you just sort of let the folks know how it was putting together the Ainsley Project?
Nah, yeah, that shit was amazing. That was the first project I think I mixed. That was the first project I mixed by myself. Like knowing how to make beats, and yeah, that was the first project I like fully arranged myself, and did a lot of production on. I made that in New York while I was staying in New York, and a little bit of it was in LA, but most of it was made in New York. It was just a time I just wanted to. All my albums got different sounds, so I was just like, nah, I just want to rap. There's no singing on Insta. There's no me trying to be melodic or nothing. It's just straight raps. And that was my focus the whole album. I was like, even when I wanted to sing on some of them loops, I was like, oh, you rapping on this. It's just a rap album. So I feel like that was the main mindset I was in. I was like, you rapping on everything. Mm-hmm. Niggas want a rap album, they're about to get a rap album. Be rapping on everything. And that was my first time just doing. And that's why I keep saying I don't know if I ever do another Insta, because I can't just rap. Like, I can't just like not do that. Insta sound like it should have been some singing on it from me. It was some singing from different spots, different people. But yeah, I think that's my only time doing one thing on one album. But I'm about to sing on like next album. So that's one thing. But like, it's hard for me to do one thing like throughout the whole album, because I just love just diverse shit. Like, I love an album that could have a jazz joint and then have a trap joint and then have a neo soul joint and then maybe have a punk. I just like that shit. I like shit like that. So I feel like Ainsley was just me trying to stay one mode, one mindset, trying to put my main writing. Inspiration was my family. I was just trying to write about mostly my family, and I feel like that's why a lot of niggas relate to it too. There's a lot of like a lot of that in there, like you could relate that to some family member. So I feel like I'm happy about Ainsley. I'm happy niggas are stuck on Ainsley. That's a part in Birmingham. That's a city in Birmingham. Niggas is stuck on a city in Birmingham, and I put that out. I die happy with that shit. But it's just like I definitely am, I think, trying to beat that in a sense. Like, niggas, a lot of niggas didn't get Negro, so they like, oh, okay, it's still Ainsley. But I hate when I'm like, this is me, but I hate when I'm somewhere like I was with the homegirl in New York, and she was trying to put her roommate on to my music, and she was playing Ainsley. And I could tell that wasn't her bag. But then in my head, I'm like, I got a bag for you. I got so many bags. And it's not out yet. So it's like, so that just made me like, man, I got to get these other bags out for shit like that. Like, you feel me? Because I got music for everybody. I just need to put it out.
That's dope, man. On that note, let's dive into another bag. Tell the people a little bit about Be Kool-Aid, your project with the producer Ollie.
My guy, yes. Be Kool-Aid is, man, Be Kool-Aid is so fun. It's so fun and so like, it's such a niche thing too. Like, every time we in a Be Kool-Aid bag, I learned more about Dilla. Or I learned more about like that time period, like that Soul Quarian time period. And it's bad. This new shit I think we're working on is very, very reminiscent, because we working with Butcher Brown out of Richmond, Virginia. And it just remind me of just like that time period where, I mean, daytime period, where niggas was just passing a lot of their drum chops. Again, Questlove to do a lot of their drum chops. Just like everybody working with everybody. Producers working with everybody. He'll play bass on this, but like we really doing like that type time. And I just feel like the Kool-Aid music is just like cookout, like fun, summer break, spring break, like seafood, soul food type energy, like just pure without trying at all, without even saying it. It just sound like that. It just sound like that. And I just, that's my favorite shit. It's really like making music with a family. But and then me and the homie, we were just talking, because he been taking photos, him, the homie Gabe and Jack, they've been taking photos of the whole process. And they were just saying like, yo, y'all don't really talk when y'all making music. Y'all just like, that's how, it's like mad organic. Like he'll do some shit, I'll do some shit. I just listen, then I'll be like, oh yeah, I'm down to record. It's like, it remind me of just like how over here, like Mad Villain and Madlib, I mean Doom and Madlib, like how they did that. They didn't talk a lot. It was just organic. And it's rare that you find that with a producer. I'm learning. Like as many niggas I work with, it's rare that nigga just this, the way he set the drums or the way he like accented that shit, it just like hit you. Like that shit, it's easy with this nigga. It's easy with this nigga, Ali, bro. So easy.
That's dope. So we're May 2021 right now. It's getting ready to be summer. It seems like it's not gonna be COVID forever. You talked about rehearsing with the band, getting that ready. What's the summer looking like for Pink Seafood? What you got coming up this summer?
The summertime. I got some coming in the summer. I got some solo stuff coming in the summer. I can't speak hella on it though. But I got some stuff coming in the summer. Okay. And then in the fall, we got some Be Kool-Aid stuff coming. Okay. And then in November, around the same time, I'm going to go on tour in Europe. See what's good. Shit opening up. See what's good. As long as everything stay plotted, they trying to open that shit up. Sad. So I got a whole tour booked.
Is that right?
For Europe. Okay. Yeah, for okay. November. And that's okay. The Nico shit.
Yes.
Finally doing that shit. That's what I've been rehearsing with the band. And that shit sounds amazing. It's my first time directing a band. Mm-hmm. Like I've worked with a band with Suave before, but Suave directed it. Yeah. So yeah, it's fire. It's fire. I'm happy. I'm excited to get folks to see it. And hopefully I succeed in this shit, because I want to keep the band work up. Like I'm a big Funkadelic George Clinton fan, so I want that big band, like for sure. Okay. So yeah, I think this year is just got some solo stuff, got some Kool-Aid stuff, got the tour, and then my group. I got a group out of Cincinnati called GK Fam, GKFAM, and I haven't made music with them in like 10-9 years, and we just got back together plotting on some new shit. And we got like, we already got like maybe we sitting on 100 songs. Wow. And we trying to work on an album. It's like a group of like 15 niggas from Cincinnati. And I'm working on that very, very closely. We just trying to get that, we just trying to get the music together for that first album. We probably gonna do two albums, But hopefully we do that first album to come out this year. If not, it's gonna come out next year. And that's cool with me. That's cool with me. But I'm working on that. And I'm working on a bunch of collab shit. I'm working on a tape with Tony Seltzer. He like a producer. He like a trap producer. He's crazy. Working on a tape with Real Bad Man. They dropped some shit with Bodie last year.
Yeah.
Working on some shit with them. It'd be like a Sifu and Friends. Just a bunch of me rapping with a bunch of features. And yeah, I'm trying to lock down this jazz shit. I want to do like a jazz series on some I shit, but on some VCR and AO.jazz shit. Mm. And I got to lock down that. But I got the musicians ready. They just got locked down that. But I don't know if that's coming this year. But this summer, expect my solo shit, some Be Kool-Aid shit, and some collab shit. Just hella collab shit.
There it is. Pink Sifu, we really appreciate you coming on and talking to us, man. Hopefully you get to do it again.
Nah, hit me whenever, yo. Hit me whenever. When I drop that, when we drop some new shit, call me back. Let's okay. Rap again.
Hell yeah. Let's do it. Hell yeah. Let's do it, man. Much appreciated, fam.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, bro. Peace.
Dad Bod Rap Pod, episode 168. That was our conversation with Pink Sifu. Cool ass cat. Definitely when he started talking, I'm like, okay, you are Southern. Like, he has a very,
right,
you know, smooth Southern vibe to him. But great conversation. I appreciate him kind of sharing his ethos, his connection to Sun Ra and Ross G. Yeah,
the stuff with Ross G, I thought was just very thoughtful and like heartwarming as well. Yeah, man. And I really like that we kind of, you know, got a little bit peeled back some layers and had him talk a little bit about Atlanta and sort of, you know, his origin a little bit, which is very mysterious. So,
yeah,
absolutely. In like longish answers, but in a good way. Like, you guys know I'm obsessed with, like, how people answer the questions and, like, there being a right way to answer the questions. But, like, this like, skittered around the edge of, like, where are we going with this? But then
right. He'd always bring it back.
It was great. You said this a little bit in the intro, Damone, but I'll just reiterate, like, our impression is, like, this guy's a true artist. Like, if he was in like 1920s Paris, he would have been a painter. If he's in 2010s America, he's a rapper. Like, he there's something within him where he's channeling something that I think is very intriguing. And I think it's interesting, Dave, that you brought up the Fly Sifus. They did the record store theme for the art, and like they're just barring out. Like, those are just like rap songs, and there's nothing wrong with a rap song. He's just got all this other stuff. Like, I've always been of his stuff, I've been more drawn to the Be Kool-Aid stuff, so I was glad to be able to touch on that with him. All the press describes it as like neo soul records, and that's not totally what I got.
Yeah,
out of
I don't
it.
Buy that.
Yeah, I don't either. I think
somebody
put out a one sheet and the press just regurgitated it, dude. Yep, that's how it happened.
Okay. Yeah, that's
okay.
That happens.
Lazy
so
journalism
often.
Strikes again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know all your tricks because we've used them.
Because we do them. Yeah. I think definitely a very insightful interview, and he's got a lot of things in the chamber that I'm really excited about. So we want to thank him for coming on the program. I definitely feel like he is one of the preeminent chameleons in the rap game, in that, as I mentioned in the intro, he shows up in a lot of different places and a lot of different vibes, and never seems out of place somehow. You can always tell when a rapper is outside of their comfort zone. It's very, very, very apparent. But he seems to be comfortable in spaces that have even nothing to do with rap, which is
totally
also amazing.
You know, the thing is with Pink Sifu, it's like he is so vast in terms of like his approach and how he projects himself. But, you know, also he never tries too hard. He never oversteps. Yeah, and I think that's brilliant, you know. Yeah.
There's something to be said about that. And we've talked about it most often in terms of what we call, kind of jokingly, and we should probably come up with a non-joke term for this, but Sludge Village, or the post-Earl Sweatshirt murky sound.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of defined by like kind of a muddy beat quality and then like a really emotionally in tune like loose style of rapping. And Ensley, the project that Dave asked him about a couple of different times, is like one of the stellar examples of that sound. Like whatever Ensley sounds like, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about that. I think people call it lo-fi, people just call it hip-hop, like, but there's something specific about that kind of
the vibe.
It's rough around the edges, and I think it's kind of defined by what Dave was just talking about. It's like, it's not trying too hard, but then it's also like those verses are written. They're not freestyled. Right. Like those beats have been dismantled to a point where they sound muddy or murky, not like
it's purposeful.
Thank you.
It's an intentional approach to the music, which I've had, you know, on this program, I've had my qualms with it. I think he's probably one of the better examples of how you do that style, which, you know, I think it's part of this really new emergent vanguard. I would put Navy Blue as part of that. There's a couple other cats that kind of fit in this thing that's, to me, almost feels like a jazz approach to things in some ways.
How they're all on each other's projects, and it seems like there's a social aspect to this. Like, I don't know how much weed you would have to have at a session like this. Like,
does everyone very come very like, blunted
like, a dispensary's worth? Like,
I think it seems like a key component to the whole.
Which is great.
And if Adult Swim was still relevant, this would be the soundtrack to it. Like, this is the whole it harkens me back to kind of like those type of vibe. So it was great to have him on, understand the music a little bit better. Negro is challenging. I listened to it to the original one once, and I definitely am gonna try with the Negro Deluxe, but also excited about his other releases. But having him on kind of sparked this idea for question of the week. Pick up your phone. I got a question. Which is, you know, when you're an actor and you can perform different types of roles, you are said to have range, right? And I was thinking, like, you know, based on our conversation with Pink Sifu, who are the rappers that have the most range? And it was interesting. Nobody said Pink Sifu. there was a lot of responses. What I do, folks, for question of the week, which if you're new to this gag, it's I post a question on Twitter usually on Sunday, and if you quote tweet it, respond to it, we read some of the responses on air. It's always very interesting that the questions are left purposefully vague. Because I enjoy the semantic arguments that jump off in between. It's like, I don't think that's the original intent of the question. I'm like, I barely had intent. Like, there was so little intent here.
Can I get off a take before we jump into the tweets? Like, on this one in particular, we got a huge variety of responses, a lot of quibbling about what range was, which is kind of no fun. But I think at the end of the day, most people's answers were just who they thought was a really good rapper.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the things about being a good rapper is having range, no matter how people define
it.
That was just a kind of overarching thing I wanted to bring to the table.
That's perfect, Nate. Yeah.
Our bud, Nate Patron, said the best rapper who hasn't been discussed yet is Jean Grey, and then brought up all the different things she does that shows her range. And I was like, yeah, totally. But
a lot of the names I was like, oh, these weren't people I'm thinking of, but I could see why you would say that. And then there were a couple like, I don't think of that particular artist as having
interesting
range. So it was a really interesting question. We want to thank everybody for chiming in on that. So let's get into it. Got a couple of responses we'll read here, and you can see the whole thread at Dad Bod Rap Pod on Twitter. The first is from at Crafty Boxing says Getz, which I'm taking to mean Serengeti. I heard Serengeti mentioned a couple times as Getty and Getz. Getz has shown loads of looks down the years. Good to see him finally break out of the guy everyone rates but no one listens to actual mainstream attention with his latest album. You know what? When that was brought up, I'm like, he might be the GOAT of this in that Serengeti, in that he almost embodies characters in a way an actor does. Like, he has characters like that he does, and they're like super convincing and believable. And I'm not sure that there's another rapper that like,
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I wanted to like also kind of go off on this tangent when we were just talking, like the type of actors who tend to have this range are not movie stars necessarily. They're character actors, right?
Right. Yep, so right.
Who's a character rapper? Serengeti is a character.
Serengeti.
Serengeti. Penny Dennis is his main character. Ajay is now emerging as another character. There are other characters buried within that. Jules, Kenny Dennis's wife. He's the master of this shit. He's so good at what he does. But I think we could do a thing where we talk about other ones. A lot of people brought up Kool Keith. A lot of people brought up MF Doom. They don't really do other characters.
That was like right. I was gonna say that, you know, Kool Keith is rapping about spaceships on Dr. Octagon and rapping about porn stars on Sex Style, but they're similar. They're the same.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Totally. It's the same dude. You know what I mean. It's not. I think it's not as personified as, say, you know, sort of what we were talking about earlier, Shock G doing a Humpty. You know what I mean?
Or straight up alter egos.
Right. Slick Rick in one song doing 10 different voices. You know.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Slick Rick did not come up. You know who came up? A bunch, and I'll read one. From our frequent listener and contributor at Fretboard Brewing Company. We'd like a six pack whenever, but it's all good. Gotta Go Ace, which I think means Aesop Rock, Boy San, Black Thought. If range is in regard to unique rhyme patterns and cadence, San takes the crown over the course of his catalog, but all can rhyme about damn near anything. Some of these responses are real head scratches, though. So, again, I think this idea of range really was broadly interpreted by many. Wanna frequent contributor Joseph, and I'm gonna get your name right one day, bro. At Kolarik Joseph.
Can I try? Yeah, I think it's closer to something like Joseph Kolarik.
Joseph Kolarik. Okay.
Let's take a stab at that. Let's see what he says. I hope you listen.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm serious.
not making light of your name, bro.
He's our favorite Bone. Slovenian rap nerd, and the community would not be the same without him, but we are struggling a little bit with the intricacies of the symbols above the letters.
Yes, because we are stupid Americans. He wrote, and this was a controversial take. Again, go to Twitter and kind of see the thread, how it develops. Elucid writes on the same level as Billy Woods, raps on the level of Andre 3000, and makes Bomb Squad level beats. The argument for Elucid is very interesting in that, again, I don't think of him as being someone with a tremendous range, but if you think about his record with The Lasso, if you think about kind of the different approach that he takes on the Arm & Hammer records, there's an interesting argument to be made. Mm-hmm. Some folks took umbrage with this. I think sometimes when you have a really distinct voice or cadence, people don't think of you as being able to have a lot of range. They're just like, I'm just listening to you. I'm not sure.
I think that's what I think. More range than Aesop Rock.
But here's the thing. Aesop was mentioned a bunch of times in I'm sorry, I did not snatch a tweet.
He does different kinds of songs with the same style, which is that
and voice and approach.
Cluster right? bomb, multisyllabic, incredibly insightful. It's amazing what he does, but he just doesn't strike me as someone who has a lot of range. But then we can relitigate the semantics of range again and again. But all to day. Me, he wouldn't be who I was thinking.
No, I was definitely very, very surprised by that. A lot of folks also mentioned Busta Rhymes, which I thought was really interesting. Yeah,
because he can do R&B stuff. He has like more rock style stuff. Okay. He has fast raps. He has like just for number of patterns.
Okay,
he's got some pretty deep range, and he's an actor, which I think a lot of people conflated the personality to act in some way. I wish I was a better writer so I could describe the look of disgust on Dave's face to you guys right now of people who misinterpreted the question. It's like he just wants to like throw his phone in the ocean and walk away from this entire conversation because he's
once again, folks, you cannot misinterpret a question that had no intent except to get y'all talking. So score on that end. Last one we'll get in is from the homie Nate Patron, who's got a new book coming out.
Oh,
I believe.
Yeah.
He's got a new book coming out. Shout out to Nate Patron.
Take a look at that, my fellow Nathaniel.
Yes. He says, Jean Grey, probably the best rapper so far, not yet mentioned. Great at storytelling and punchlines alike, can be herself or a character or somewhere in between, can be hilarious on one track and emotionally devastating the next, and a great compliment in guest spots, posse cuts. I like that definition of range in that sometimes it's one artist. I mean, whenever Jean Grey comes through, you know, it's her. But this idea that you could do a lot of different types of songs, which is not necessarily everybody's strong suit, right? Like, Nate, who would you be an example of a rapper who's good but just doesn't have a tremendous amount of range?
Snoop Dogg.
Interesting.
Well, let's set the reggae thing aside.
Like, yeah.
He's himself.
Snoop okay, Lion this, never happened.
Yeah, exactly. This is my thing. Snoop Dogg's a movie star. He's not a character actor. He's not going to come in and give you pointillism. On one track and broad strokes on another.
He's gonna give you Snoop Dogg.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. He's gonna give you a Corona commercial.
And a game show. And a game show. Word to RIP Combat Jack, he is the most beloved rapper that exists. Yes. Yeah. I agree.
Someone said him as an example of someone who has a lot of range in the thread, which was that's just where we differ. We all have our own opinions.
But he does show up, but he could show up on literally any one song and you wouldn't be surprised. If I was like if I was like Katy Perry has Snoop on, and if I was like YG has Snoop on, you would be like, and probably both of those things exist, right? Mm-hmm. So it just, I guess it does depend on the semantics of the of the question. We want to thank everybody for indulging us every week on, usually on Sunday, I'll post a question at DadBodRapPod on Twitter. You can also connect with us on Instagram at DadBodRapPod. Shout out to all the new folks joining our Instagram feed and hopefully listening to the pod because Open Mic Eagle had a little Folgers with the Dad Bod Rap Pod mug and took a picture of it. So I love that guy. And a lot of new folks are joining us because of that exposure, and we are always grateful for it. Be like Mike. Get a mug. We got mugs for sale. You can check it out. It's linktree.com/DBRP. You can get to our merchandise thing and order yourself a mug for this hot boy summer that's coming up. You could put the drink of your choice in it and come outside, who knows? But we thank everybody. We are a proud partner in the Stony Island Audio Network. And you know, we just gonna keep churning them out. We had a great interview today and we got more in the can. We are the Dad Bod Rap Pod.